So good evening, everybody. Start by setting our motivation. And so, having studied karma through this series of teachings, we have even a greater basis to reflect on how much it's taken for us to even be here right now. What causes we must have created and how many lives we don't even know. Practicing virtue that results in a human life. And then surely having met the teachings and having practiced to some extent the six far-reaching attitudes, having made strong prayers to meet the teachings again, we must have done this many, many times in the past for all of those causes and conditions to come together that bring us right here, right now, to be able to share the teaching. So just thinking how amazingly rare this is, and also how brief the opportunity is. We know it goes fast. And as a result of having been able to meet the teachings, we have some idea of the difficulties of cyclic existence, the endless cycle of birth and death and birth and life and death and birth and life and death in so many realms, and that this is the state of our condition. This is the cycle we're on, we and everybody else. And so just, again, realizing our great fortune and all the positive potential that we've generated in the past, to set our motivation tonight to create some more so that our time of sharing together plants seeds in our own minds that ripens in our own liberation. And then especially as we study this text, that we plant seeds that will ripen in our spontaneous bodhicitta, our growing equanimity, love, and compassion, and great resolve to liberate all beings from this cycle of existence. To set Buddhahood as our goal, and our reason for doing it, to be able to teach all living beings to create the same kinds of causes, to be able to liberate themselves and attain Buddhahood as well. So, I'm Thupten Chuni, for those of you out there. These people all know quite well. And we're doing Mind Training Like Rays of the Sun by Nam Kapel. And we're reviewing Venerable Children's teachings. So, my assignment was to review the teachings from January 1st, 8, 15, 22, and 29. That was a lot of stuff. So, last week, Venerable Jigme continued with the review of the four preliminary teachings. Now we have a ritual of reciting them, right? The four preliminaries are precious human life, death and impermanence, karma and its effects, and the disadvantages of cyclic existence, right? So she did a thorough review of the third one, which in the text is called Actions and Their Consequences. And so Nam Kapel, just to cover that, Nam Kapel covers the four characteristics of karma. And they are the certainty of actions and their results. So every virtuous action results in happiness or pleasure. Every non-virtuous action results in suffering or pain. The multiplying nature of actions, or that karma is expanding, that a small action can lead to a big result. You don't face the consequences of actions you've not done. In other words, if you don't plant the seed, you don't get the fruit. And once committed, actions do not fade away, with this kind of chilling verse. Even after hundreds of eons, actions are not exhausted. If they meet with the assembled conditions, the embodied beings will meet with their results. So not thinking that just because it happened a long time ago, it's not going to happen again. So that really, in the book, is a very, very short section. It's just these four things. Venerable Children then went ahead and taught about 3.5 more weeks on karma. So that's mostly the area that I have for tonight. And there's so much really wonderful, juicy stuff. It was hard to pick because the other part that was covered here is the whole fourth preliminary teaching, the disadvantages of cyclic existence. So we're going to go through a lot on karma, and then we're also going to go through the disadvantages of cyclic existence tonight. And I've been kind of going through throwing things out at the last minute, knowing we won't get to it. So we may be throwing things out as we go along, but there's just so much wonderful stuff here. Venerable Children talked about why understanding karma is so important, and I think it's good to just reinforce that in our minds. That when we first become Buddhists, the first thing we do is take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And that means turning to the Buddha as our guide, as a, you know, for safe direction, for safe harbor. So the first thing the Buddha advises us to do is to stop harming others as a way to begin to take a safe direction in our life. So in order to stop harming others, we have to then begin to understand what harm is and what virtue is. And that's what takes us to the whole study of karma. And then furthermore, the more we get intentional about our Dharma motivations, you know, whether we want to have a good rebirth, or whether we really get the idea that cyclic existence is pretty miserable and we'd like to be liberated from it, or whether we decide that we want to develop equanimity and love and compassion and the great resolve and determine ourselves all the way to enlightenment. No matter what our Dharma motivation is, the understanding of karma helps us both be clearer and clearer about what to avoid in order to attain that goal, and then also what to emphasize in our life, what to practice. And some of these things she taught about, like the weight of karma, also helps us understand how to kind of enhance what it is that we're already doing to really make sure that we're heading in the direction that we want to go. So those are some of the advantages of studying about karma. Last week, Venerable Jigme took us through the four parts that make a complete action. So just to review those, because that's kind of the basics. And a complete action, having these four parts, then has the power to determine where we will take rebirth. So that's the significance of this complete action thing. So an action that has the object, the intention, the action, and the completion. Meaning there is an object for the action we're about to do, we're about to kill, so we're going to kill that ant. The intention, which has three parts. Discrimination, which means we correctly identify the ant we are going to kill. The mental affliction is present, especially in a negative karma anyway. So we're going to do it because we really don't like ants. We have a hatred in our mind at the time that we're going to go after this one. And then we have the motivation to do it. So we want to kill the ant. So we're going to do it. The action means you put your finger down and smash it. And then the conclusion, completed action, is that we have the intended result. Yep, ant's dead. So that's what makes the four, that's what makes the complete action for any of both positive and negative actions. So the reason that's important is because then we start, what she taught us, started talking about is the weight of karma. What makes something heavy. And maybe it's worth talking about for a minute about how complicated karma is. We often, I know this has certainly been true in my own mind, keep kind of a simplistic view. You know, we learn about the 10 non-virtuous actions or the 10 pathways of non-virtue, and we think, okay, so one negative action creates one negative result, or one positive action creates one positive result, and it's sort of like kind of easy formula. But there's so many different things that determine what will ripen, how it will ripen, what the result will be, that only a Buddha actually understands karma completely. You have to have an omniscient mind to be able to see all the infinite factors that are involved. So what Venerable Chödrön continued to teach then are some of these more, not more complicated, but some of these more in-depth ways of understanding karma, so that we can think more deeply about our own actions. Think more deeply about what and how to purify, and then, as I said, think more deeply about how to enhance what we're already doing in a positive way. So this weight of karma was the first thing that she talked about. Reminding us, just as I said, that this is all a dependent arising. There are just many, many, many factors. So the weight of an action is one of the things that has a bearing on how karma will ripen, what the result will be. So there's five factors. The weight of karma, the strength of intention, the method of the action, or other translations of the nature of the action, the lack of an antidote, whether distorted views are present, and then heaviness in relation to the object. So this first one, the strength of intention, I think is easy to understand. You know, if we have a mind that says, I will do this no matter what, there's a very strong intention there, whether it's positive or negative. You know, if it's the last thing I do, I will do blah. That has a very strong intention. If we just say, yeah, I'll do this. Yeah, okay. Or somebody says, you want to do this? Yeah, fine. There's not much intention there. So the weight of our intention, if we're pursuing, again, killing that ant, will be quite heavy if we feel really determined that we've been chasing that ant around the kitchen all afternoon and we're going to go get it. That's a strong intention. The same thing with the positive action. You know, if we really feel like I want to be on retreat, I'm going on retreat, I will make the 3 months, I will clear it out, very strong intention. So that adds to the weight of the karma. The method of doing the action has several parts. It's the nature of the action. So this is like how we do the action. That's where I think nature actually makes more sense, the nature of the action itself. So, for example, if we do something over and over and over, it becomes heavier and heavier and heavier. And this, I think, was one of the places where Venerable used as an example our meditation practice. If we are consistently, you know, doing our meditation on a daily basis, again, 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 then the positive karma that we create from doing that gets heavier and heavier and heavier through repetition. Same thing through the habit of any kind of negative action. You know, the negative action of stealing. You steal a candy bar every afternoon on the way home from school. You're in school for a lot of years. The negative karma that arises gets heavier and heavier as a result of that repetition. So then the second way that the method adds weight is in how you do the action itself. So, for example, in the case of political prisoners, if the person is tortured before they're killed, then there's an especial cruelty in that, and so the weight of the negative action of killing is much heavier. Or in the case of making an offering, you know, if you really plan and think about it and make an offering with two hands and, you know, have a very, you know, thoughtful way of making the presentation as opposed to just saying, here, that offering has a much heavier weight than the passing it on. If the action is something that we do ourselves with all our own energy, or if we're part of a group, will make a difference. So if the, you know, even in the case of making an offering, if the group makes an offering, it's lovely, but we're all in there together and it's a group offering from everyone, doesn't have as much weight on the virtuous side as personally making the offering ourselves. Then if we take delight in doing the action, it makes it heavier. This is both for virtue and non-virtue. So we really relish stealing that candy bar. We got away with it. Makes it a heavier action. We really rejoice at having... that's later. We really relish or enjoy our experience on meditation. Makes the virtuous karma heavier. If we plan and prepare for it over a long, long time, it makes the action heavier. So she uses an example, again, that 3-month retreat, that if the people had to think ahead, they had to organize many, many, many things, that makes the karma of being on that retreat much, much heavier in a positive way. And then relishing afterwards is another thing that makes it heavy. They often talk about rejoicing being a way of making the karma heavier. So, you finish a positive action and you feel really happy about it, that karma is heavier. You finish a negative action, you feel really happy about it, that karma is heavier too. And we can feel happy about both. So that's the method or the nature that makes it heavier. So then the third one is the lack of an antidote. So that seems fairly obvious to me on the one hand. If you are doing a negative action and you don't have an antidote, then of course the negative action will be heavier. But there is this one thing that I thought was very interesting about this lack of an antidote thing. She said, if we don't do any constructive actions or we don't do many constructive actions in our life to sort of like balance out the negativity, then the negative actions we do just get heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier because that's really all that's sitting there. And that by the same token, if we spend our life mostly trying to keep ethical discipline and mostly doing constructive things and, you know, once in a while we slip up and do a negativity, that negativity will not be as heavy. Because it's sitting in a nest of habit of the mind that's actually more positive or more constructive. So I thought that was very interesting. So then the fourth one that makes it heavier is whether we hold distorted views while we're doing the action. So an example that we've heard over and over again is really the thought of suicide bombers, who not only have whatever affliction is motivating the action, probably anger, I would guess, but also have this belief that this is going to buy me a place in heaven, or that this is going to somehow, be of great virtue. So that distorted view will make the negative action heavier. And then the fifth one that makes it heavier is the object that we do. So in relationship to, so there's three key ones that we talked about. The first one is of parents. Are parents as a field of merit? And why? Because our parents are the substantial cause, or provided the substantial cause for this precious human life so that we can practice the Dharma is the main thing. And secondly, our parents were offered a kind of kindness that we haven't experienced since, because when we were completely helpless, they or somebody took care of us and kept us alive. So that kind of kindness makes them a very, very strong field of merit. And I've always, this is just me talking, but I've always found it really interesting that in the list of the five heinous actions, the five actions that are, you know, like immediately at the end of your life send you into hell realms that are, they're so negative if they're not purified. Killing your father, killing your mother, killing an arhat, drawing blood from a Buddha and causing schism in the Sangha. But that killing your father and your mother are like the worst thing you can do. So that really, for me, adds additional fuel into how strong a field of merit our parents are. The second one that we create, that we need to really pay attention to in terms of the heaviness of karma, is karma in respect to our spiritual masters and the three jewels. And this is because of their critical importance for our progression on the path. But any time, so we need to be really mindful, especially, I would say, as we're living with our spiritual mentors, especially mindful of the things that arise in our mind, because the karma we create is very, very heavy, both positive and non-virtuous. And then the third one is the karma that we create in relationship to people who are needy, really poor, or ill. They're the field of compassion, she called it. And so the reason is that they are in particular need. So if we are creating negative actions, if we're stealing from the poor, if we're lying to elderly ill people, this is a way heavier action than lying to somebody who can, who's healthy and strong and can bear it. Not that it's better, but there's a heavier karma there. And so by the same token, caring for the ill, providing for the poor, taking care of people who are really in need, has a heavier weight. That's our object. So it's very helpful to look at the actions we do and then how to maximize our positive actions by looking at the heaviness, you know, looking at the weight. Thinking about, you know, how do we serve our teacher, or how much do we serve our teacher, or can we increase that? How can we benefit our parents, not doing what they want, but benefiting them in a way that helps enhance our positive virtue? Okay, so there was the heaviness of karma, and then she got into the results of karma, which was quite lengthy, and maybe to cut this one a little bit short, I think there was lots and lots on this. One week she taught from Nagarjuna's Precious Garland, where he had something like 21 verses on the results of karma, and then the next week she came back and taught very, very specifically about the results of from the 10 non-virtuous actions. So I thought I would combine those because there was some pretty interesting stuff there. But in general, every action that is a complete action ripens in four specific ways. Sometimes they call it three ways, but it always comes down to four, so I'm just going to talk about the four ways. There's what's called the ripening result, which is the rebirth that we take. There is the causally concordant result, which is the habit to do it again. There's the experientially concordant result, which is the result, the experience similar to the cause, they say. So you get what you did in short form. And the fourth is the environmental result. So what that means is, so if we have the complete action that has all four parts complete and it's heavy enough, then that action will result in our rebirth. That's the first one in any of the realms. The second one, this one about the causally concordant result, means that we have the habit to do it again and again and again. Right? So it's in accord with the cause, the habit to do it again and again and again. The experientially concordant result is the experience like the cause. So we have a tendency to experience something similar to what we did. And then the environmental result means the environment that we're born into or what we were just and so forth. The causally concordant result, the habit to do it again, is considered really the most poisonous. I mean, you have a negative rebirth, that's bad enough. And maybe you have, then in a human life, you have the result that you experience. Again, it was killing. You have a short life, you're killed. But the thing that's really deadly for our long-term development is that this causally concordant result, or the habit to do it again, means that we just do it again and again and again and again. So if we have a seed in our mind to steal, and we steal in this life, and then we steal in the next life, and we steal again and again and again, we just, that very habit is what continually takes us down, down, and down into lower rebirths again. So we have another human right life. So many eons later, all the causes come together. Boom, I'm born as a human. I have the habit to steal, or I have the habit to harm. Bad news. So there goes that life. Once again, we're born in the lower realms. So this is the one that is most, I think, kind of chilling to think about. So when we're doing our purification practices, determination not to do the action again counteracts this habit. One. So that's why they often, when they're teaching about the four opponent powers and purification, they talk about how the determination not to do it again is so very, very important for the purification. And this is why. Like, counteracts that habitual result. It's also why taking and keeping precepts is so important. It's the same thing. Because we then, when we take precepts, whatever level we take them, then we're making this determination in our minds, I will not do this action. So if we have the habit to do it somewhere in our mind stream, the seeds for that are there, then taking our precepts puts a stop on it or puts a damper on it for a while. So we can keep purifying and keep purifying and keep purifying. Yeah? So let's go through the karmic results of the 10 non-virtues. And then what I'll do is where the Nagarjuna piece comes in, I'll also add that at the end of each one, and then add some more at the end so we can see how those two intermesh. So for all of these, then, because they're 10 non-virtues, they all will result in a negative rebirth or a lower rebirth, either in the hell realms, hungry ghost realms, or as an animal. And for all of them, the causally concordant result will be the habit to do it again. That's going to be the same. So, for example, then we'll start with a killing. Ripening result is a lower rebirth. Causally concordant result is the habit to kill again and again. The experiential result is to have a short life. So, you know, clearly if we kill, we're taking the life of others, then our experiential result is that we too then will have a short life. That's if we're born, when we're born as a human. And then the environmental result is to live in a place with strife, where there's war, where the food and drink and medicine aren't potent. So in a really dangerous place that's filled with the same kind of experience that we created. And where the mitigating forces of food or medicine or those things that should nourish us and nurture us don't work. So that would be that kind of result. So what Nagarjuna said is a short life comes through killing. And he said much suffering comes through harming, which follows right along with the same thing. So if we harm physically, even if killing isn't the action, then physical suffering is what we will experience as well. Another good thing about learning about these karmas is when we're, we don't know what we've done in our past lives. We can guess. But when we're experiencing a result, then we can think, oh, this must be the result of or something like that. And it helps us with our purification practice. So that's another reason to really think about, like, much suffering comes through harming. If we're having a lot of physical suffering, then let's purify what harm we've done. The karmic results of stealing. So the ripening result is a lower rebirth. Causally concordant result is the tendency to steal again. The result that's from the experience, concordant with the experience, is that we experience poverty or the lack of material possessions. So, reasonably, we separate people from their stuff. We don't get stuff either. Very, very logical. And then the environmental result is that you live in a place with many dangers where there's a lot of poverty and droughts and floods. So, you know, it's not safe for people to keep their stuff around us. We're born in a place where it's dangerous. We're born in a place where there's poverty. And that's what Nagarjuna said. Poor resources come through stealing. Then the karmic results of unwise sexual behavior. Again, lower rebirth, the tendency to do it again. The experiential result is that in the future lives, you wind up with a disagreeable spouse and marital disharmony. And then Nagarjuna said enemies come through adultery, which is really, I mean, that actually happens in this life too. Enemies come through adultery. But again, in future lives, that will be the result of unwise, unkind sexual behavior. And then the environmental result is living in a dirty place with poor sanitation and lots of misery. So a place that kind of smells and there's garbage all over the place and like that. And that can be like a, you know, a whole country that can be like that, or simply the house you live in. So the environment can be many different levels. The karmic results of lying, again, lower rebirth is the ripening result, the habit to lie again. Then the experience concordant with the cause is that you will be slandered and deceived by others. So people will speak badly about you. Slandered means not accurately, but will ruin your reputation. And then also will lie to you. Makes sense? The environmental result is living in a place with a foul odor, a place that stinks. Our lies stink. So, the environmental result is to live in a place that stinks and where the people are deceitful and there's a lot of fear. So, a lot of fear results because we can't be trusted when we lie. We set up a situation where people don't trust us, and so that's the environment that we are born into when we're born again as human. From lying arises slander. That's from the Precious Garland. The karmic results of divisive speech, lower rebirth, tendency to do it again. The result similar to the cause in terms of experience is not having friends. So if we are disharmonious in our speech, so we speak with the intention to divide people, we speak with the intention of kind of separating and causing difficulties between people, then very logically, again, I think we don't have friends in a future life. Friendless state. Then the environmental result is that we're in a bumpy place where the ground is uneven and travel is difficult. Bumpy. Yeah, I thought, what is that about? But Venerable Children had an answer. So the disharmonious speech makes things bumpy and uneven in relationships. So we're born in a place that's bumpy and uneven and it's hard to travel. So the Nagarjuna says, through divisiveness comes a parting of friends. So total agreement there. The karmic results of harsh speech. Lower rebirth. And I don't know about you, but when I start thinking about speech and lower rebirth, that gets a little sobering. Harsh speech causing a lower rebirth. The habit to do it again results. And then the experiential result is that we are criticized, abused, put down, insulted. We get what we dish out. And then the environmental result is a harsh word is living in a barren and dry place that is inhabited by uncooperative people. There are many thorns, sharp stones, and dangerous animals. I think we create that. It's just so vivid, really, to think about it. From harsh speech comes hearing the unpleasant, is what Nagarjuna said. And it's not just criticism. You know, it could also be environmentally being born under the flight pattern. I mean, living under the flight pattern in the airport. We have harsh sounds coming in. So it's hearing the unpleasant in many, many different ways can be a part of the environmental result. But for sure, when we're in a situation where we're hearing criticism, where we're hearing, whether it's there or not, we can really think about what we've done to harsh speech-wise to create the causes for this. Then the karmic results of idle talk, again, lower rebirth. Tendency to do it again, I know. Whew. And the result similar to the cause in terms of our experience is that people don't value or listen to our words. So I know, well, maybe you haven't all had the experience. I have had the experience where you actually think you have something to contribute and people are just like, totally blow it off. That is from a result of doing blah, 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 blah. So that where would you find a meaningful word in the midst of the blah, 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 blah? hard to find. So that's the experiential result. The environmental result is you live in a drab place with an unbalanced climate where the fruit does not ripen at the proper time. Why? This is a quote from Venerable Children. Because idle talk, what does it do? It dries everything up. So, you know, makes everything kind of barren and empty. Empty words, blah, blah, blah. Dries everything up. That's your environmental result. And Nagarjuna said, from senselessness, our own speech is not respected. Okay, so then the three mental non-virtues. The karmic results of coveting, again, lower rebirth, tendency to covet again. And with these mental ones, the experience similar to the cause is very similar to the habitual one, I guess because it's a mental thing. It's having intense desire and lots of craving in your mind. And so there's this constant craving and desire. And one of the things that Venerable talked about that is so detrimental from this is how much it affects our Dharma practice. That we want so much to practice virtue, we want to practice concentration, and yet we have a mind that's constantly craving, going after things. This is a result of our coveting in previous lives. So we can really concentrate on purifying coveting if that's a part of our experience now. And then the environmental results. Where is it? The crops are small and the environment constantly deteriorates. So covetousness related to greed. So we take when we're reborn the environment is a place where there's not much to take. Can't be done. And the Precious Garland quote I thought was very interesting on this one too. Covetousness destroys one's wishes. Now, what is that about? Destroys one's wishes. Venerable Children said it destroys our being able to realize our wishes, because when we spend all of our time coveting, grasping, wanting, we're pushing away karmically the possibility of the good things that we have. So that this coveting destroys one's wishes. It's interesting to think about. So the opposite would be to really cultivate our contentment, I think. Rejoice in what we have. The karmic results of malicious thoughts, lower rebirth, the habit to have malicious thoughts again. The causally concordant result in terms of the experience is to have lots of hatred in the mind. And then the environmental result is parallel. It's a place with epidemics, disputes, dangerous animals, and poisonous snakes. So a very, very dangerous place. And then the Precious Garland said, harmful intent yields fright. So this too would be a result of having malicious thoughts, is then to be born as a person who's really fearful. And why not? I mean, we've spent our whole lives planning, thinking how to get back or how to get somebody, how to harm somebody, then of course, then we'll have that expectation about other people or about our experiences. And so the tendency to be anxious or a tendency to be fearful, I think, is an interesting one to think about. And then the karmic results of wrong views, again, lower rebirth, the habit to have wrong views over and over again, and the experiential result is to be born deeply ignorant. So this could either be born deeply ignorant in terms of having mental defects in that way, but also Venerable suggested that it could also be deeply ignorant in terms of not being receptive to the Dharma, of being really hard to the Dharma, you know, being quite intelligent otherwise, but hearing the teachings and just, you know, not taking them in or not wanting any part of them. So deeply ignorant in that way. And the environmental result is to be born in a place with few crops, you lack a home, and you lack a protector. So this is like lacking a refuge. creating the causes to not have a place of refuge. So she also said, then our correct views are our best protection. Because our correct views are what help us want to generate more correct views, help us want to learn the methods of the path and then practice in a way that creates virtue. Then the precious garland gives us a few more of these things. Taking intoxicants leads to confusion, mental confusion, and this life too. Through not giving comes poverty. So that means having the means to give, but not doing it, not practicing generosity. Through wrong livelihood comes deception. So that wrong livelihood teachings especially are about monastics and the ways we gain support, not through hinting, not through coercion, not through giving a gift by accepting things. There's lots of sneaky ways that we're not supposed to do that. And it's deceptive. So through wrong livelihood comes deception. Through arrogance comes a bad lineage. And a bad lineage is being born in a lower caste or being born in a situation where you're an oppressed people. So this also makes sense. Through arrogance, or think we're on top, or the oppressor sometimes, if we're really arrogant, then being born in a place where we are the oppressed. Through jealousy comes little beauty, and an unattractive complexion comes from anger. Both of which are true even in this life. We're not so gorgeous when these things are going on in our minds. So that's the karmic result. Stupidity comes from not questioning the wise. That one's tricky. So when we have an opportunity to learn, we have an opportunity to question and don't take it, don't use it. The result of not taking that opportunity is to be born stupid. But prior to all of this is a bad migration. So as bad as all of these results are that from Nagarjuna's precious garland, as bad as those results are, they are results for humans. And before that comes a lower rebirth. Then his last verse is opposite to the well-known fruits of this non-virtues, of these non-virtues, is the arising of effects caused by all the virtues. So I had planned to go back through those 19 and let's look at the positive results, but we don't actually have time to do that. But it is, I personally have found this more of an obstacle in all these karma teachings, all the homework we had about looking at our negative actions and looking at what actions were complete. And then she suggested that we look at our positive actions and do the same thing. I didn't do that. And then as I'm looking through these things, looking at how beneficial it would be if I spent some time actually paying attention, the same kind of attention that I'm starting to pay to the negative actions, to the virtuous actions, it would be very, very helpful for my mind and would help me get clearer, not only about what not to do, but what to do. So I recommend, I who have not done it, recommend that everyone take a look at this particular section and go back and think through the results of positive actions, the karmic results, and really set that as our goal and aspiration. So there's so much stuff here. We're going to cut. We're going to cut right to the end of the karma thing. But anybody that has a chance or wants to, go back through it, because there's so much interesting stuff about how karma works in those weeks, that the proximity of, like, how what order karma ripens in, some stuff about purification, really useful to really meditate on and help deepen. Venerable talks so much about how we don't believe in karma, that if we believed in karma, we would behave differently. And so belief in karma only comes because we think about these causes, think about these effects, think about whether they make sense to us or not. So in meditating on these, especially these results and the heaviness and looking at our own lives, that's what helps us deepen our belief in karma, because that understanding of karma is what will support and propel our practice towards liberation. Really, that's the underpinning. As Nam Kapel says, so remembering the certainty and multiplying nature of karma, that an action not done will yield no result, and that once done, an action will not fade away, will obstruct all that gives rise to the path of black actions. You must earnestly engage in white wholesome actions, and since training in the precious awakening mind is considered to be the principal and supreme virtue, all of them should be part of that training. So all of the virtues should be part of that training. So that concluded the section on karma. So then we got to the drawbacks of cyclic existence, which we'll go through kind of quickly. The first is the disadvantages of uncertainty. And this text specifically emphasizes the uncertainty of relationships. In cyclic existence, relationships with friends and enemies are very changeable. Things of this world are not reliable. They are miserable. Other places I've seen talking about this talk about the uncertainty of pleasures of cyclic existence. The pleasures and enjoyments come fleetingly for just a moment and then are gone. So there's no uncertainty there. So whatever way we take it, the instability of cyclic existence is what this is about. So all of our craving and longing for security, which we have, wanting things to be stable, wanting things to be sure, wanting things to be known, doesn't happen. Things just change constantly, constantly, constantly. So that's the first drawback or disadvantage of cyclic existence. The second one is the disadvantages of dissatisfaction. We don't have to go to Nagarjuna for any authority on this. Mick Jagger did it just fine. I can't get no satisfaction, and I try, and I try, and I try, and I try. I can't get no satisfaction. Understand attachment to objects of desire as being like a leper seeking for comfort. When tormented by maggots, he sits by the fire but finds no relief. That whole maggot analogy was very vivid. Of lepers, their flesh falling off, maggots eating them, and wanting to relieve the itching and the pain, so it's kind of cauterizing or burning them in the fire. Also painful, but relieves the itching. But then what? It's just this incredibly vivid, horrible image that I think is really accurate. Can't get no satisfaction anywhere. We're never happy with what we have, who we are. And we can't shut up our little minds that keeps wanting and wanting and wanting and wanting and wanting. So we have a lot of craving, a lot of attachment. So that's the second one. The third is that the disadvantage is of having to discard our body over and over and over again. That is a very polite way of saying we die and die and die and die and die, no matter what form we're in. Humans die, animals die, hungry ghosts die. Quoting from the Friendly Letter, they talk about the heap of each sentient being's bones equaling or being greater than Mount Meru, if you piled them all up. So it's a fantastic meditation to actually think about how the bones of this body and then the bones of previous life body and the bones of a previous life body and the bone of a previous life body and the bones of a previous life body and the bones 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 and endlessly, just a pile of bones. What does that look like? To get a picture of how this cycle of death and 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 death occurs and the agony of it. It's not like we get better at it, but the separation from the body over and over and over again. I mean, I find that one quite horrifying. So that's the third one. The fourth one, you get born, ta-da, you enter a womb over and over and over and over and over again. It's not like we get born and get to hang out on a cloud. I mean, die and get to hang out on a cloud for a while. We're right back into some womb, somewhere, some rebirth, and the pain of being conceived and then growing in a womb, the pain of birth, going through those crushing boulders as you try to enter, completely confused, you have no idea, you're completely in this alien environment. Who are these people? What's happening to me? We don't know. We go through this over and over and over and over and over again, whether you're a little chicken pecking yourself out of the shell, or whether you're a little human with an enormous head trying to come through this little tiny birth canal. It's the same thing over and over and over. So this is the fourth disadvantage. The fifth disadvantage is continually changing from high to low. So this refers more to rebirth, but it actually happens within a single life too. The text quotes having been chakra, one of the lords of the gods of desire realm, you have all these maidens and food and drink and la 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 la, and then your next life crashing down into the hell realms. Over and over and over, we go up and down like that. But even in this life, people lose our status, we lose our money. Our status goes up and down and up and down. So it's milder, I think, than a crash from the god realms to the hell realms. But it's painful. Constantly painful. And so in terms of rebirth, for sure, this sort of horrific view that no matter how virtuous we are trying to create the causes for an upper rebirth, that ends too. It's all over. So the point being, of course, no birth in cyclic existence is really satisfying. And then the last one of this list is that we experience suffering alone. So, that's really true. On the one hand, even in this life, who really knows how you feel? Nobody. Only you have your feelings. So even your best friend is not in there experiencing that with you. We can empathize, we can sympathize, but we don't experience that for each other. So there's that loneliness, but then we die alone. Who goes with you? Nobody. Nobody. So in that most frightening or that most, well, frightening, that most new of situations, we go alone. And then when we're reborn, even if you're twins, you may be in the womb with somebody else, but you're experiencing that confusion of being reborn all by ourselves. And so this too is just Jeffrey Hopkins once said something that has just stayed with me. It was a fragment of a teaching, but he said our relationships with each other is as adventitious as a pea and a carrot side by side in a pot of boiling soup. Meaning, your relationship, this pea and this carrot, the soup is boiling and you're just going to go. There's nothing to hang on to. You cannot cling to that person. You cannot cling to that. The pea cannot cling to that carrot. It is alone in that pot of boiling soup. So we are alone in this journey. So then the text goes through and lists the eight sufferings that are specifically tied to human beings. We talk more about the three sufferings of cyclic existence. The point of all of this, the point of all the preliminaries, is to guide us to the point of realizing that cyclic existence is not worth being, and to create a motivation to liberate ourselves from cyclic existence and to, as a platform then for developing bodhicitta. So, Venerable talked quite at length, and I've heard this many times before from her, about the fact that our compassion must rest on a foundation of our own determination to be free. Otherwise, it's not compassion. Why? Because compassion for ourselves really means that we recognize the state of our difficulties in cyclic existence, recognizes that if we keep doing what we've been doing, we stay in the same cycle of birth, life, creating negative karma, dying, reaping the result, birth, death, life, birth, over and over and over and over and over. And that really making a determination to be free off of that cycle is the first step and the only way off. It's the only way to get off the merry-go-round. And so to have compassion for ourselves then means that we want to be liberated from this. And to have any kind of compassion for others, we have to want to relieve them of their suffering as well. Not just on the superficial level of wishing people didn't have a headache, which is great, and that is a virtuous wish, but it's a headache that will come back. And it's a headache that will come back and come back and come back. So to really develop a heart of compassion that says, I wish to do whatever it takes to be freed of the causes of headaches forever. And based on the practices that we're about to learn in this text, developing our equanimity, recognizing the kindness, love, all of those things, developing all the way up to the resolve that says, I will not only free myself, but I will free every other living being. We have to have this foundation of our determination to be free in order to make that commitment for anybody else. So that is the purpose of this whole preliminaries. That's what the preliminaries are about. So we end this chapter by saying, when understanding the disadvantages of cyclic existence gives rise to a determination to be free, you should know that the precious awakening mind is the main supreme path to liberation from cyclic existence, and that this should form a part of the training in the awakening mind, this determination to be free. This concludes the way to think about the preliminary teaching. So that's our goal, to think about these preliminaries again and again and again and again, until we want nothing more than to be freed from cyclic existence. And on the basis of that, we want nothing more than to develop our love and compassion so tremendously that we want to free everybody else. And that's how we spend our time. So, that's the story. And it's 7:01. So, dedicate.
Due to this merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious body, mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain paradise, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezi, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma, done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasi Abbey in the West Floor.